thank you very much, everybody, for joining. And thank you, Kathy Baskin, our Assistant Commissioner for Water, for arranging this call again today. My name is Martin Suberg. I'm the Commissioner of the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection. Appreciate everybody being on this call. Just a note, as always, this call is being recorded. As is our practice, we take a copy of the recording and place it on our website, a link to it on our website following the call, because some folks may find it useful to review the information, and we want to make it available to folks if they have such an interest. In addition to Kathy Baskin, we have the leadership of our wastewater program in our headquarters office on the call. We also have representatives of each of our regional offices on the call, recognizing that it's important that we all are, you know, aware of what each other is talking about. And if there are particular issues in a particular area, it will streamline the ability for us to work on it collectively. I'll have just a few updates in a moment before we open it up for questions. But first, we are fortunate each time we do this to be joined by EPA and representatives of its wastewater program. I believe it's Jeff Kopp on from Region 1 today. So Jeff, if there are any EPA updates you'd like to offer, if you wouldn't mind unmuting yourself, I know everybody would welcome that.
Sure. Hello, Commissioner, and everyone else on the line. This is Jeff Kopp filling in for Denny Dart today. I guess I just have one update, and that has to do with the memo that Denny Dart mentioned towards the end of March that Susan Bodine from EPA's Office of Enforcement and Compliance Assurance had issued. It was sort of known as the memo that discussed EPA's exercise of enforcement discretion for certain environmental legal obligations that might not have been able to be fulfilled due to COVID-19, such as certain monitoring, sampling, and reporting obligations. At the time, that memo didn't have any end date in it, and so just a couple days ago, on June 29th, Susan Bodine issued a slight addendum to that memo, just indicating that the exercise of enforcement discretion would be, under that memo, would be ending officially on August 31st, 2020. The memo does explicitly say, however, that on an individual case-by-case basis, EPA is certainly willing to take into account any circumstances which might make it difficult or impossible for an entity to comply with its obligations. But just letting you know that the memo itself, as sort of pointing to that memo for a basis for EPA exercising enforcement discretion, is going to expire on August 31st. And I think that's it.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that, Jeff. Appreciate that update. And, you know, we'll... you know, the good news is with these calls, we can continue to coordinate, even if some of these sort of overarching policies are changing. So thank you for that. And we are also fortunate each time when we're together to have the chair of our licensing board, John Murphy, be able to give us updates and answer questions. So, John, if you, there are any updates you'd like to offer, if you wouldn't mind unmuting yourself and filling us in, that would be great.
Yep. Thanks, Commissioner. Just a few minor updates here. Board is up to date on all applications and emergency certifications, so that's good. One issue to bring up for the exam sites: anyone who is scheduled to take an exam, face masks are being required in the exam site. So if you don't have a face mask, you will be turned away. There's also a health questionnaire that needs to be filled out and completed beforehand, basically stating that over the past 14 days, you've had no flu-like symptoms, or you've been in contact with anyone with COVID-19, or some travel restrictions. So we just want to make sure everyone who is potentially taking the exam is aware of those. issues, and to make sure that if you are going to the exam site, you bring a mask with you. Lastly, online training. We've seen a lot of trainings coming up. I would expect a lot of the fall conferences are already going to virtual format. So I would recommend everyone that, you know, we're 18 months out from a renewal period. So it's a good opportunity to start chipping away with the training hours. There's going to be a lot of good trainings available this summer and fall, and a lot of smaller intervals. So you're able to take 1 to 2 hour training components. So that's the update from the board. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, John, and appreciate, as always, your keeping us posted. I might add a little bit in the area of professional licenses. Yesterday afternoon, the governor did issue the latest executive order, and it did talk a little bit about professional licenses. And I believe, as you know, a number of licenses were sort of administratively continued, or, you know, continued by the executive order. They expired after, I think, March 18th or something like that. This executive order basically says that after July 10th, things that are expiring and need to be renewed will follow the ordinary course. Things that were administratively or, you know, continued by executive order between March 18th and July 10th, boards are being directed to basically say that, you know, continue those until October 1st. It's a little bit complicated, but the gist behind it is to make sure that the boards have a chance to deal with what came in during this, you know, first part of the emergency period, and also start going back to more ordinary operations and schedules. We'll make sure that we are posting the latest executive order on our website, and I do understand that there will be a little more guidance forthcoming about how that plays out. We will certainly make sure that we're sharing it with John's board, as well as the Board of Drinking Water Operators and other boards that DEP deals with. But you know, it's an effort still to make sure that, you know, things that might have been disrupted by the emergency, that we give time for people to, you know, to get caught up. And then, like I say, after July 10th, start to see if we can keep things moving in the ordinary course. So we'll put some things on our website on that. One other update is something we've talked about a number of times, and I suspect this probably will be the last time we'll talk about it, but is the distribution of the cloth masks. As you know, EPA Region 1 was able to secure, with Homeland Security's help, what ended up being a total of 60,000 masks, cloth face coverings, and they had to be they were dedicated to water and wastewater system employees. And as you recall from being on these calls earlier, we had two rounds of surveys and developed a very, a distribution system to make sure that we could get them out into people's hands very quickly. So nearly 60,000 masks were distributed to over 400 facilities. And I want to make one more time, each time I've talked about this, I feel like I've missed somebody. So Kathy Baskin was good enough to put together this list. We really want to thank our regional partners who both received the shipments and then worked with DEP to make sure they got into the hands of other facilities that needed it. And we're also tracking them so we could submit the report to EPA and Homeland Security that demonstrated that they got into the right hands. And those partners are the MWRA, Greater Lawrence Sanitary District, Upper Blackstone, Springfield Water and Sewer, Barnstable, Brockton, and New Bedford. And we also had organizations that helped and volunteered: the Mass Water and Wastewater Agency Response Network, WARN, the Mass Water Environment Association, the New England Water Environment Association, NEWEPIC, the Mass Waterworks Association, the New England Wastewater Association, RCAP Solutions, Mass Rural Water Association, Worcester Water and Sewer, the Lowell Wastewater Treatment Plant, the Brewster Water Department, Harwich, Edgartown, Groveland, Ipswich, and Plymouth. So it was quite an effort, and a lot of people came forward because, as you know, getting masks in short order and figuring out how to get them to all the places in the state they needed to be was a little bit daunting for us in the beginning, but it worked smoothly, and thanks again to all those partners who helped us achieve that. So I wanted to thank one last time all those partners. With that, I will just also note that when we were last together, I talked about the how we were going to handle NPDES permits going forward. Now that, you know, we're doing things a little bit more on a dual track with EPA, we do have materials up on our website that if you're an entity that needs to be applying now for a NPDES permit as well as a State Clean Water Act permit, here's how we will try to process it and try to stay as close to the EPA process as possible so we're not duplicating efforts and you know, leading to uncertainty in the permitting process. So that is up on our website. And again, if you have particular questions, you know, feel free to reach out to either our headquarters folks or our regional folks, and we'll put you in touch with the right people to help work out some of the process issues. So with that, I am going to open. I don't think we got any advanced questions in writing, so I don't really have anything to cover on that. So if there are any questions that folks would like to raise now, I might either, I guess it could come in through the chat or, you know, through an email to Kathy Baskin. And I don't know if we've gotten any of those, Kathy, while the call has been ongoing.
A chat just came in right now. So, if a NPDES permit application is, quote unquote, in process or already submitted, does the permittee need to reapply?
Let me ask the program. So this is a case, I don't know if we have Susie King on the line or Leldon on the line, you know, to make sure. It seems to me like if they applied, even under the, you know, under the old approach, they did also submit an application to DEP. So I'd like to think that the answer is no, they don't need to reapply. Certainly, I don't think they need to reapply for federal purposes, but for satisfying our state purposes, I think we have, you know, if they've applied, I think we can use what we have. Is that correct? Can anybody unmute themselves and provide some clarity to that?
Yeah, this is Susie. I can, what you said is correct. So the application process itself isn't changing as a result of this change. So anyone who has already applied, your application is still valid. You do not need to do anything else. You may see some changes when your permit is actually renewed, but for application, you are all set.
Okay, thanks, Susie.
And let's see, I believe we just got an email submitted. Our town is preparing for the financial impact of the coronavirus and may possibly lay off one of our operators or reduce our operating hours. Our plant is currently operated with three operators, which is the minimum required. If the town does move forward with a reduction of hours or a layoff, is that acceptable to go against the staffing plan due to financial hardship?
You know, as an initial reaction, I think, you know, first and foremost, I'd encourage you if you're facing that situation to make sure that you're reaching out to the regional office that works with you and make sure that we have a fuller understanding of how operations are going to change. I think that's going to be one of the most important factors to, you know, being able to really answer that question. You know, again, there are there are standards, you know, there are minimum standards that we and EPA need to make sure are being addressed, you know, and with a change like that, we recognize that, you know, this, we're all in confronting a different situation. I think the best thing, you know, you can do early on is talk to the region, and we will give you the best sense of whether or not we're seeing problems and whether or not there are issues. And if there are, you know, we'll also try to brainstorm with you on you know, possible avenues to address the situation you're facing. I don't know if Kathy or Leldon or Susie, you have anything you'd like to add to that.
Or maybe John Murphy had, he had mentioned this problem to me yesterday, that some of the towns are facing possible layoffs and shortages of staff. So, John?
Yes, so if, you know, especially with the small facilities and operations being, you know, potentially reduced, I'm going to echo the commissioner's sentiment that, you know, we need to be reaching out to the regions and we need to have open dialogue. You know, going under minimum staffing standards is, you know, potential compliance issues. So I think the ongoing dialogue is going to be necessary.
Okay, Commissioner, there's another question that's come in. Is there any evidence if antibodies indicate that a person is no longer a transmission risk? And as a follow-up, are there any policies being formed with exceptions for or special considerations for those who have tested for antibodies? So the first one is there any evidence that a person with antibodies is no longer a transmission risk?
Yeah, we're gonna have to talk to our colleagues at Public Health and our Office of Research and Standards. I am uncertain based on what I know today personally. You know, you see things. You know, there's an awful lot out there, but this is still a new virus and a new health situation. So I wouldn't want to hazard a guess about what the latest either science or theories are about antibodies and how that's played out. I have not heard a lot yet about it, but I think it's a very important question. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to commit that we will reach out to our Office of Research and Standards, who will in turn coordinate with Public Health, to try to get you the best information about whether or not we can draw any conclusions about if somebody's got the antibodies. You know, what does that mean in terms of either, you know, resistance to the illness or, you know, ability to pass the illness on? I would not want to hazard a guess on that. So we will do that. And if we can pull it together quickly, we'll put it out on our website in advance, but we will certainly be prepared to talk about it the next time we're on the call together.
Okay, and I do not see any other questions coming in.
Okay, so if anybody would like to ask anything, you know, verbally, if you'd like to unmute yourself by hitting *6, this would be a time to do that.
Hi, how's it going, Commissioner? This is Paul Furlan from the City of Fall River.
Hi.
Hi. So I've been hearing that they're looking at modifying the use of the money of the CARES Act that has been provided to municipalities. Has there been any talk about being able to provide subsidies in ratepayers with their bills?
I haven't heard about this with respect to the CARES Act, but again, it's a great question. I will go back and ask. You know, we've been trying to, you know, let people know with the folks that we deal with in the command center and others that are that are looking at responses to the virus. You know, we still hear that there may be another stimulus package that might, you know, address municipal issues. But it's been a while since I've heard anything on this. So I will go back and check, but I have not heard of any recent immediate activity. And, you know, it's possible we have some of the representatives of some of the professional organizations who may be dealing with people in Washington, D.C., that may have additional updates. But I personally am not aware of anything going on right now, but I will ask.
Okay, thank you.
And I don't know if anybody wants to add, you know, what, depending on what they're hearing about, what Congress is thinking about. Sounds like not. So that's the second homework assignment I owe this group. You know, what's going on with the CARES Act and helping offset the revenue impacts, as well as the question about antibodies and what the science is telling us about that.
And Commissioner, I do not see any more questions coming in through email or the chat.
Okay. I don't know any if other
people online maybe have questions.
Well, if there are no other questions, what we'll do is, like I said, we have DEP has two homework assignments that we're going to diligently follow up on. In the meantime, you know, if we get other updates about things, we'll be certain to make sure that we're pushing that information out. But we'll also plan, as is our current schedule right now, we'll plan to do this call again on July 15th at 9 a.m. Do I have that date right, Kathy?
Yes, that's correct. And
okay.
And I just want to, before you sign off, I did see Nantucket has written in Nantucket question mark, and I just didn't know if we missed. I didn't see anything in the chat, Nantucket. So did we miss something?
No, thank you, Kathy. The I just had a question for all the other facilities or whatever that's online.
Oh, okay.
We're performing the BioBot testing out here, and we're coming up with some interesting results at different times. I didn't know how many other facilities were actually doing any of that testing, and if they are using the results for any of their Board of Health members.
This is Marty. I'll start, and I would be interested from hearing, you know, also from the other systems. But there was a story yesterday, I think, in the Boston Globe about how the MWRA has signed on with BioBot to do a study. I get the sense that I think Boston Water and Sewer is also doing some work with BioBot. So I know at least in the Metro Boston area, they're working with BioBot to gather this information and work with it and see what kind of, you know, useful health trending data it is. But and again, that MWRA story was as recent as yesterday. But I don't know if anybody else on the call is doing work with BioBot at this point. And, you know, one last thing I will say is, you know, obviously it's an interesting area, you know, in terms of, you know, talking about trends and what it can help communities decide about whether, you know, the extent of, you know, whether it's trending upward, trending downward, what does it show? What is the timing of what it shows? It's a fascinating technology.
Hi, it's Melissa Labonte in South Hadley. I just wanted, excuse me, to let him know that we are still participating in it, and we do share the information with our Board of Health. Right now, we're still trying to figure out how to actually make it work for us. So we've dropped it down to twice a month, at least through the end of July, and then we'll reevaluate what we're doing. One thing we are doing, though, is we are testing this week to get a current baseline, and then we're going to test in 2 weeks to see what happens with the holiday weekend. And then we'll test again at the end of July and then decide what we're going to do from there. You know, there is some discussion because we do have Mount Holyoke College here on, you know, should we do any testing if they plan to reopen in the fall, but, you know, no decisions have been made yet.
Now, Melissa, that's interesting. And can I ask, are you testing, you know, when BioBot works with you, are they just at the plant or are they also trying to get down to the sort of the more micro level of, you know, are they sampling in various parts of town to help figure out concentrations or are they up at the college or is their sampling right now focused, you know, at the treatment plant itself?
We just test at the treatment plant. It's way too expensive for us to test, you know, different sections of town at this point.
Right, right.
I mean, $1,200 a test is very pricey.
Yes.
We're doing the same thing. We're testing only at the facility. But we are finding some interesting results.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. It certainly seems to be an interesting technology, and BioBot's obviously doing a lot of work. We've also heard in different parts of the country, other institutions are trying to develop this kind of wastewater surveillance. I guess that's what they call the general effort to track, see what they can help. With regard to, you know, COVID trends, so.
Yeah, I mean, I guess one thing that maybe if the CARES, you know, if we do another grant through that is maybe trying to see if we could get some funding to at least do some testing in the fall through that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if it's going to be eligible or not.
Right, yeah, because, finding sources and, sources of funding is definitely an issue, and we're hearing more about it, and we're obviously trying to make sure we're staying plugged into public health, and because ultimately it's, I think, the boards of health and medical communities that will be able to make the best use of this information, but all of you are obviously key players because you manage the facilities where this material can be collected, sampled, and analyzed. So we're trying to stay in touch. But there's been a lot. I will say there's been an uptick in attention here, certainly, and we've been fielding calls as people think about what the future of programs like BioBot would be and how it can be used going forward. So we'll make it a point to keep everybody posted on that. I don't know. Are there other systems that are dealing with BioBot or a system like that want to contribute?
Commissioner, this is Beth Card. Good morning. From the MWRA, as you noted, we are finalizing our game plan for working with BioBot. That's in the works this week, and at the same time, we're coordinating with the Department of Public Health on how best to share the data that's generated with them and how to publish that information. So that's a work in progress from us, for us. And I would bet by the July 15th meeting, we could probably share a little bit more detail on how that's going to work.
Well, that's terrific. And you are coordinating with the Department of Public Health, which is, that's an important data point. Yeah.
Yep.
Great. Thanks for that update.
And Commissioner, there are a few more comments. So BioBots definitely generated some interest in some chat. Wendy Reed mentions that she met with BioBot and they have a legal opinion that testing is eligible for CARES Act reimbursement. And they said that they would help to apply. So that helps perhaps to overcome the hurdle. Also, Nantucket has offered to just briefly go through some of the trends if you're interested in hearing what they're seeing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So go ahead, Nantucket.
I can definitely share my screen if someone wants you to see the quick samples, and but that would be up to you, Marty. If I can quickly share the screen if you'd like.
Sure. For those who are on, looking at this on the computer, definitely, feel free. If you're comfortable doing that, I'm sure people would be interested in seeing it. Yep.
I think I need someone to give me permission to do that, though.
I think I've done that.
Kathy.
So,
you've done that? Great.
Yep.
All right. Here comes one of them. So this is our sample from June 8th. Up until June 8th, we were not detected in any of our sampling. And you can see now we've had quite a significant jump in now the detected level, which translates down here down to below the bottom right corner, where it says estimates of approximately 160 cases of people that could be shedding the virus. This week alone, our testing for positive numbers at the hospital has gone up by 6 in almost 2 weeks. So our numbers are starting to climb here. We believe that might be because of the influx of tourists that are showing up on the island. The one thing that this sample is, that this sample is quite different than, let me see if I can pull up the other one quickly, is the fact that the 2 weeks after, we were back down to not detected. And we believe the reason we had such a high detection rate in the June 8th sample is because we were performing dewatering on that day, and we believe we might not be getting it or capturing it as much in the waste stream, but it is definitely within our sludge. Is the only explanation we can have for such a big jump in a matter of just a couple of weeks. So the results are fairly complicated to try to decipher. Luckily, our Board of Health director is highly educated in a lot of this stuff, but so we are seeing some changes, but it seems like we're finding it more in our sludge than in our waste stream. And that's, I just wanted to share that with everybody.
No, that's really helpful. And can I ask, would we, if we wanted to, if would you mind sharing electronic forms of that we can grab? I'd like to share it with our public health partners, just to make sure that we're, letting them know what communities are dealing with it, as I'm sure they're, there's growing interest in this topic.
Yeah, well, absolutely. It's actually already up on our town website. All of our results have been posted. And
terrific.
I believe I have your email, or Kathleen's. I can email you guys all the documents if you'd like.
Right, and South Hadley's been doing it since the end of March, so we have a history there. So I can share that as well.
That would be great. I think that would be timely. I remember a few months ago, Wareham shared one of the analyses that they had gotten, and that was helpful to pass on as well. So if you're willing to share this data, I think I think people would be interested in seeing it.
Yeah, and I just, going back to, his concern about the numbers, and I did raise this a few weeks ago with BioBot, only because we had one spike, but it actually followed a rain event. And so my question to them, and if they have accounted for it in the modeling, is, especially here, we have water table issues, so we have a lot of fluctuation in our sewer. Because the test doesn't differentiate between live and dead viral copies, you could potentially have deposits in the sewer that following storm events are getting flushed. And if you happen to be sampling at that time, would cause this significant increase in your numbers. So it was a concern that I did raise with BioBot after I noticed it in one of our samples. And I know that they are looking into that. So I don't know if, your sampling coincided with a rain event, but it could be a possibility.
No, that's something we will look into for sure. However, we have missed almost all the storms that you guys on the mainland have missed, had. We got hit the other day, but prior to that, we haven't had any rain at all in well over a month. So it was, that's very interesting because you guys have, and I will look at the forecast, what that day was if we did have any rain. Thank you.
Commissioner, this is Wareham, and our testing has been pretty steady through rain or without rain. So I'll share that. I'll send you our results. I think we started late March, I believe, or early April. I'm not so sure, but it's been pretty steady, pretty consistent. And it ties into the nursing homes, et cetera, that had some significant cases. So it all tied in. So it's helped us. But I will share it, all the information we've got since the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And Commissioner, we sometimes have listeners from New Hampshire. We also have listeners from Connecticut on the line. And so Alyssa Beck writes in with respect to Greenwich, Connecticut. We are participating in BioBot testing and found it very useful. BioBot does have information about the CARES Act funding and has been helping us to get some funding from the state of Connecticut. Our trends have represented what seems to be going on in the New York City area in the Connecticut state from clinical data and patient testing. BioBot has informational calls on Friday afternoons. If facilities are interested in hearing more, it might be useful to tune into one of those calls. I can provide call information. That would be terrific if you could post it in the chat or send it to my email, Alyssa. I think if you post it in the chat, that would be great.
Either way, I think if there's a call, you know, again, I know, you know, for a whole bunch of reasons, understandable reasons, I think people are very interested in. So that kind of ability to sort of hear real time how communities are working on it, I think would be great information to share if possible. Well, I'm sure we're going to be hearing more about BioBot, you know, both from the systems that are using it as well as people that, you know, are going to want to be using it, going forward as the tool gets greater recognition. So we'll try to make sure that we're keeping everybody posted. Like I say, we've talked a few times with our partners in the Department of Public Health to see, you know, whether they're thinking about and I know they're thinking about, what the prospects of this tool could be for their many efforts to track and respond to COVID. So we'll make it a point to stay in touch with people.
Okay, and this time there are no further questions.
Okay, well, I'm glad people, I'm thank you, Nantucket, and thanks everybody who, South Hadley and Connecticut and Wareham and MWRA for chiming in. It's, like I said, it's a very timely subject, so I'm glad you brought it up. All right, well, with that, I thank everybody for being on this call. Like I said, we'll try to keep the information moving. At a minimum, we'll make it a point to have our call again on July 15th at 9 a.m. In the meantime, thanks for all that you're doing to continue to, provide these most essential services to all of our communities. I hope everybody has a good 4th of July and everybody's staying safe and healthy. And thank you again for being on the call.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Bye.